What is going on, crypto family? So today we bring on the super impressive and humble CZ, the founder of the number one crypto exchange in the world, Binance. We cover a ton of info that you're not going to want to miss. This is a more down-to-earth chat where we cover things like where is CZ from, how he got his start in crypto, what he went all in on, words of advice for like entrepreneurs, how he tackles complex problems, some of his hobbies and talents, why he's so driven, you know, why he hasn't retired yet, right? He probably could have a couple times over already, but he hasn't. Find out why. Some of his price predictions, market sentiment, you know, what he thinks about things, some of the important people in his life. And it's really super fascinating what he thinks that we are all living in. So you're not going to want to miss this. Hey peeps, please help us grow the family. Give us a comment and review on the Apple or Google Play Store. It's super quick and easy. Just scroll down, click the little stars, comment, and just help us grow the fam. Enough of me rambling. Let's go see CZ. Let's go see CZ. What is going on, crypto family? So today we have the one and only, the man, the myth, the legend of finances and crypto, CZ. So thanks a bunch for making time for us, buddy. Appreciate you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me here.
Awesome, man. So what part of the world are you in? Where are you at in the time zone scale of things? It's about 7 p.m. here.
I'm in Singapore, so it's about 11 a.m. right now.
Nice. Yeah, Singapore is it's a nice place. They got a bunch of great buildings and great food and people and all that kind of stuff, but a ton of smog too. Yeah. So, you know, brought you on just to kind of hear your story more. A lot of people, you know, of course they know who you are, but they'd love to learn more about you and the stuff that you're doing in the space. So if we could just kind of start off at the beginning, man, who is CZ, man? Where'd you come from? Where'd you go to school? How'd you get into crypto? All that kind of fun stuff.
Sure. Okay. I'll give you a little spiel about my life. So I was born in China, grew up in a province called Jiangsu. It's near the shore, kind of a 6 hours drive north of Shanghai. And then I stayed there for, until about 10 and then went to Hefei, which is a different city about 6 hours drive away. And then from 12-ish, I went to Canada, went to Vancouver first for high school, and then went to Montreal, McGill for university. After I graduated, I worked in Tokyo for about a few years, doing some outsourced development work for the Tokyo Stock Exchange related trading systems. And after that, in 2001, I went to New York to work for Bloomberg. Stayed there for 4 years, and then 2005 I went back to Shanghai to do my own startup together with five other guys. I'm the youngest guy of those two, so I was a junior partner. And then I lived in Hong Kong, Singapore after that. So been living around a lot of different cities. So kind of have a worldview of like what they call the world citizen kind of mentality. So yeah, that's kind of my background. If you want to know how I got into crypto, it was about 2013. So I've been running that startup for 8 years. So 2013, so from 2005, running that startup for 8 years, and then learned about Bitcoin on a poker table with the previous CEO of BTC China, Bobby Lee, and Ron Cao, his investor. Ron Cao's an investor at Lightspeed Ventures. So they were very serious. They said, CZ, you should consider putting 10% of your net worth into Bitcoin. And there's a small chance you will go to zero, so you lose 10%. There's a much higher chance you will go 10x or more, which means you will double your net worth. So they were pretty serious about it, and they're pretty good friends of mine. So I've known them at that point. I've known them for more than 5 years. We've been playing poker, just hanging out, etc. And I was like, I better look at this thing pretty seriously. So I read the Bitcoin white paper, etc. And then I basically went all in. I sold my house in 2014. In Shanghai, my little apartment, but it actually sold for about $1 million. Put all of that money into Bitcoin.
You didn't go the safe route, the 10%. You just like all in.
Not only that, I was in December 2013. Just as I was learning about Bitcoin, I quit my job. So I left that previous startup. I said, I didn't have a new job. I just said I'm going to do something in the crypto space. And my other partners in the other startup that didn't really want to do another project in crypto that's kind of too new, just said, well, that's fine. I'm going to leave and do my own stuff, figure out what to do on my own. So I basically quit my job, jumped in the crypto space without having a new job, and then sold my house, put all of them into Bitcoin. So that's kind of how I got started. Yeah.
That's pretty incredible. I mean, especially the fact that you had the foresight or the knowledge, or I guess just the balls to go all in, you know, right there on something just from a poker table of all things, right? So that's pretty crazy, man. But obviously it's paid off for you big time, man. So yeah. And then with Binance, what, you know, I mean, so you got into Bitcoin and then you decided, you know, I can do this better. So you just created Binance. How'd that come to be?
I got into the crypto space 4 years before I started Binance. So I kind of got in end of 2013. So mid-2013 is when I learned about Bitcoin on that poker table. And then I spent about half a year learning about it. And then I was like, wow, this is revolutionary. This thing will change the world. And it's going to have a bigger impact than the internet. And so that's why I was very confident to sell the house, push all in. But actually something happened right afterwards. I bought Bitcoin at $600. Basically, literally within about, it was, as soon as the body dropped, and within 2 months, it dropped to about $200 per Bitcoin. And it stayed there for about a year and a half.
So what was going through your mind? What was going through your mind at that time right there? Because you went all in, right? So you basically just lost a crap ton of money. So what are you thinking?
Yeah, so for me, it was okay. I always knew I can take care of living. So I still have I will be able to get a job. I found a job very quickly. So that was only like maybe a 2 to 3 week period where I didn't have a job. So my living conditions were okay, but it was still a very large sum of money that I just lost, or at least on paper. Or at least, it was with Bitcoin, it's actually a realized gain because the market price is the market price. So, but my mom was the one that's really worried and pissed off because she says, "Oh, look, you stupid kid." But I was okay. I was like, look, I'm in this industry for the long term. And if you look at 5 years, 10 years later, you'd be good. It was not easy, absolutely. But I did go through that period.
You weren't calling Bobby up. You weren't calling Bobby up saying, I'm going to get you, you know.
I'll meet you out there at your car. Decision, right? So I joined a wallet company back then, blockchain.info. And then I joined a Chinese crypto exchange first. And then I left that exchange due to different value systems. And then in 2015, I started a company providing cloud exchange system to other exchanges. So basically, we're just building the technology. And a lot of those systems were not for crypto trading. It was actually for a different type of what they call culture arts trading. But they do have order books. They do have matching engines. And 2017, I had the idea of doing a crypto-to-crypto exchange even back in 2013, but the market was too small. 2015, we revisited the idea, crypto was too small. And then 2017, Poloniex and Bittrex were doing really well on volumes, and the trading volumes are there, the revenues are there. So we said, well, let's give it a shot, and we got really lucky, just grown very quickly with the market.
Yeah, you guys, I don't know that it was luck, but there's definitely a crap ton of, you know, skill and I think education and timing and all that kind of stuff. And it looks like it's paid off really well. I remember reading somewhere in the past week or something like that, that like the BNB coin was one of the only few coins that outperformed, you know, Bitcoin. It was up like 150 or 200% just in 2019. So that is impressive, if nothing else, right? I mean, forget about all the crazy stuff that you've built that's amazing and successful, but just for your coin to be up against everything else is pretty incredible as well. And I think I read somewhere else too that you guys are not only did you open offices in the US, but you guys are also opening offices in I think Turkey, is it?
Yeah.
What made you pick Turkey of all places, or is it Istanbul or Turkey?
It's Istanbul city in Turkey. So we follow a very simple strategy wise. We're very simple. We just want to enable access to crypto. So we want to provide fiat access all around the world. And there are, unfortunately, limits on how many cities I can visit personally, or our team can visit, can interact, can come into contact with people locally. And Turkey is one of those places that's a very relatively active market. And we think that it's worth establishing an office. And U.S. is obviously a very big market that we didn't target from the beginning, but two years later, we have a lot of demands from U.S. users, so we said, "Well, let's establish a U.S. presence." So we're trying to establish presences or enable access from all around the world, and that's part of our mission. That's what we will continue to do.
Gotcha. Yeah, I've been hearing a lot more about you know, Istanbul and how it's becoming more crypto friendly. I know that they've got Istanbul Blockchain Week coming up, I think next year or something like that. So, are you going to be there? Are you going to make a presence? Because it's one of the spots you can go, right?
Yeah. So I'm not too sure yet. I only plan my schedule out like a month in advance. Every time I agree to the to a conference like 3 months in advance, I get myself caught in a situation. Something happens. So I try not to schedule too far in advance. Yeah.
I gotcha.
I'll definitely try to go there if I could. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, with your office there and, you know, the Istanbul Blockchain Week, you know, the, you know, right there, just kind of makes sense. It'd be awesome for you to have a big presence there. But yeah, I mean, what's kind of your you know, your thoughts on the current market conditions of what's going on in crypto right now? You know, there's a lot of people that are, you know, a little sad, you know, a little disappointed in, you know, what's going on right now. And what's kind of your take on the market?
Sure. Actually, so for me personally, like, again, this is not official analysis sure. or comments, and it's just my personal view, which could be wrong. But for me, it feels very much like the $200 range back in 2014. It felt like went up to a peak, but then it came down. But if you look at it like a 3 or 4 year cycle, a 3 or 4 year time frame, I think all the feelings I was feeling when Bitcoin was $200, I think a lot of people are feeling them at 8,000 right now. But if you think about those two numbers, 4 years ago, it was 200. Now it's 8,000. It's kind of stabilized around like 7,000, 8,000-ish. That's huge. That's tremendous, right? So if you look at a longer time horizon, I think we've seen so much growth. And but sure, so and also from a technology point of view, if you look at the fundamental technology, it's going to be around. It's more countries adopting it. 5 years, 10 years, 50 years, 100 years later, blockchain will be huge. Blockchain will be everywhere. So I'm not worried about the market at all, but or the long-term outlook of the market. So that's why we're in this industry. We're trying to spend so much effort building stuff. But short-term, for short-term investors who want to cash out very quickly, it is a very turbulent market. So the short-term price trends are very hard to predict. So I don't try to predict it. But if you're in crypto, you got to be able to handle, because it's a smaller market cap asset, you got to be able to handle higher fluctuations.
Yeah, no, you definitely you hit the nail on the head there. If you're in crypto and you've been here for a minute, you're used to getting your ass kicked a little bit. And so it doesn't always go up all the time, right? But, you know, as far as you personally, and of course, you know, not, you know, speaking for Binance or anything like that, people always love predictions. They love to hear what, you know, a very influential guy like yourself has to think about. You know, where do you think Bitcoin is? Are you bullish? Are you bearish? Where do you think it'll be at the end of the year? All those types of predictions that everybody's going to want to know from you.
So I'm always extremely bullish on Bitcoin. I think Bitcoin, even though, to be honest, I think the development activity on Bitcoin is probably less than the development activity than BNB, for example. We have more people who we're kind of slightly more centralized team. We're kind of a very decentralized team compared to most other teams, but compared to Bitcoin, we're probably definitely more centralized because there's a figurehead, kind of myself and all these other influences. But Bitcoin doesn't need that kind of development to push it forward. Bitcoin has something that's really strong. It's called network effect, right? So if you want to learn about blockchain, you have to learn about Bitcoin. And Bitcoin is the most decentralized coin. It really achieves that purpose really, really well. So if you want to be like fully censorship resistant, fully decentralized, fully autonomous, you go for Bitcoin. No one knows who the founder is. The Bitcoin core team is kind of now, some of them even hate each other. So there's not a lot of centralization. There's a lot of debates going on. So I think Bitcoin has that decentralization strong point and the network effect already. So I think it will continue to grow for the foreseeable future. So if you look at, again, 3, 5, 10 years out, I think it's going to be worth a lot. But again, that's just my personal opinion. And if I don't believe that, I'm not going to spend all my time in this industry, right? So I do strongly believe in that. But short term, so I always say that a very simple strategy is buy Bitcoin and throw it in a closet for 5 years and don't touch it. It almost doesn't matter what price point you buy. That strategy probably will work quite well.
Gotcha. So where do you think, you know, everybody likes a price prediction. Where do you think it'll be at the end of the year? You think it'll be, you know, over 10 grand, under eight, you know, what are you thinking?
Yeah, end of the year is really hard to predict. It's literally
really
only
close.
Like, I don't know, 2 weeks away.
Exactly.
It's really, really hard. I really don't know. But if you say like a year, if you say 3, 5 years, I think you'll go up a number of X. So single digit or double digit number multiples. So I don't have a formula to predict. I don't know how the other guy come up with a precise number with a precise time. They usually have some kind of formula. But none of those formulas are super are very accurate, but they do give some indication. But I think most of the people who are in this space, who have been in this space for a long time, are very bullish about it. So I would say, a couple of years down the road, I don't want to put a number out there, but it's going to be really, really high.
Gotcha. Yeah, you were speaking to some of the points about Bitcoin that I've spoke about for years. Do you think that with the decentralized team that Bitcoin has, being how it's not, there's really no incentive for the core team to work on it except unless they have a big bag of it or they're being philanthropic. They're not really getting paid, right? So like with Linux, it's an open source, code that big corporations pay developers to upgrade and build it up so corporations can use it. Do you think there should be some kind of community or some kind of fund for Bitcoin to help improve the development, from other developers? Do you think there should be something like that created to kind of help with the growth? Or do you think it's just fine the way it is?
I actually agree. I think both are fine, to be honest. We're very happy sponsoring developers for Bitcoin and for other blockchains, and also, of course, for our own Binance chain. So we actually have a program called Binance X where we just give grants. There's no it's not an investment. It's not shares or equity that we own. It's just, okay, here's a little bit of money to fund developers to write code. About 80% of them work on Binance chain, but there's 20% who work on various random stuff like Lightning networks, other privacy chains, and stuff like that. And I think basically given the decentralized nature of Bitcoin, the progress over time is going to slow down because there's debates that's about I think we're going to see that cycle over and over with many cryptocurrencies. When they first start, it's a more centralized team. Even though they may not report to the same manager, but it's a smaller core group, and they agree on the initial mission, and the speed of development is really fast. But as the community gets bigger, different people have different opinions, different views, and you get decentralized, and the speed of development will actually decrease. But the adoption, the network effect will increase. So it will, then for the good coins, especially in Bitcoin, in Bitcoin's case, the network effect will carry it a long way. But I think for as an industry participant, as a relatively big industry player, we're super happy to fund any development. There was initiatives even back in 2014 by different companies funding Bitcoin developers like BitPay, Blockchain.info. They all did this sort of a grant programs. And we're happy to do that as well. I think so. A little bit of both is okay, but at the same time, I think in a decentralized world, you can't. Many people have the expectation that if you're making money, you have to give grants. But that's not necessarily so. In a decentralized world, you couldn't expect or force people to do donations or do grants. It has to be done by will. We're willing to do it, but we're not forcing any other industry player to do it. If we force them to do it, then it kind of defeats the purpose. It's not an organic growth kind of role.
Gotcha.
So I'm okay with both. We're happy to do it, but we don't force other people to do it.
Gotcha. And you personally, do you think Bitcoin is just fine as it is, as kind of like a peer-to-peer digital currency, or do you think it's more of a digital gold? What do you think it's being used as more, digital gold or as a currency? Which use case do you see that is better currently?
This is the thing that I think most people are confused about. The way humans learn about things is we want to classify into something we understand and we know about when we see something new. But once in a while, we'll make a new category once we see enough of that kind of stuff. But cryptocurrency fundamentally is different from gold, even digital gold and all other. It's also a little bit different from a currency. I think it serves all of those purposes, like a currency, a commodity, like everything. But fundamentally, cryptocurrency is a new asset type. It's like a car is not a type of horse. It does a lot of similar functions and it better in a lot of senses. It has some limitations. Before, when cars were first invented, if you don't have roads, then you can't drive there. Where the horse can go there. But I think that's exactly what we're seeing with Bitcoin. People try to classify it into an old type. So for me, it's not so much what the classification is. It's what are the features? What functions does it have? So we could use it for payments. We could use it as a store of value. We could use it for micropayments. We can use it for very large payments. We can use it for e-commerce. We can use it as investment. We can use it. So there's many different ways to use it. It's just easy to carry. It's not going to get damaged. So it has a lot of it doesn't have inflation. It fixed that problem as well. So it has a lot of those really good properties. Some people ask me, is Bitcoin money or not? I'm like, well, whether it's money or not doesn't matter so much. What matters is, does it have value? Does it have value to you? Does it keep value? Does the value increase? Does it help you? Does it have a usability that you can use it that makes it more convenient for you? So those things are important. So it's really the value behind it. So I would say, yes, it does. For me, it does totally replaces gold. I don't buy gold at all. I don't see the point of buying gold when we have cryptocurrencies. And I don't see the point of using a lot of the other traditional financial instruments. So Bitcoin replaces a lot of different categories. So I think people are too hung up on classifying it into a name. Whereas let's just recognize this cryptocurrency is a new thing. And he has this many features that overlaps with many other asset classes. And let's just use it.
Yeah, well explained. I like that. Now, with Binance, you've created an exchange empire. It's incredible what you've built and how quick, you know, that it was able to get where it's at. And what's something that you're most proud about that you've built with Binance? What are you most proud about? And what's the biggest thing that's still yet to come?
I think one of the things I'm really proud of is before, when people talk about cryptocurrency exchanges, most of them have a bad rap. Like most people have some complaints about an exchange. Basically, when people trade, when they make money, it's their good judgment. When they lose money, it's the exchange ripping them off or something like that. But with Binance, I think we established that our ethos is to protect users. We do things very ethically, very positively, and very properly. So, and with that, we built a lot of credibility and trust, and that's how we were able to grow so quickly and grow and stay on top of a very competitive industry. So I think we did that really well, and that's something I'm really, really proud of. With operating the exchange, it's actually very tricky. We're very close to the money. Whatever rules we make really impact one user type or another. So it's really a very, very fine balance to keep everything balanced. So I think we maintain that balance quite well, and we provide a good product people use and people can trust. So I think it's that credibility that's super important. I'm really proud of it. And I think we have a really good team that executed without any shenanigans, without any issues. So I think I'm really proud of the team being able to establish that credibility and uphold our ethos.
It's awesome, man. So being very customer-centric and offering value to them and taking care of them at the same time. What's the biggest thing that's still yet to come for Binance? Something that you're looking forward to that the rest of the world hasn't seen yet, but you know, one day if everything goes well, they will.
I think basically, for me, I don't try to imagine the next big thing. So I'm not a genius or like a creative guy like that. It's not like I'm trying to invent the next big thing, but we do, we are more of a brick and mortar, a step-by-step, a steady evolution type of growth, where we want to give the best product, the most stable product, and we continue to add more products at the speed we can handle. So we're adding more value-added services like staking, like loans, so where you can make your crypto to make more money for you using much lower risk methods. So we are now expanding this sort of whole financial system onto crypto. So those are the things that we kind of do. It's more of an evolution rather than a revolution. So we don't, to be honest, there's not a big thing that in my head that would disrupt everything, but we step by step continually improve. So we make incremental improvements over time. This is something that may be different with many other founders. They try to do the next big bang, but I admire those guys, and I hope that they become successful. And when they do, we may try to copy them. Who knows?
So in the meantime, you're just going to keep crushing it and just get better at crushing it every single day, right? So it's awesome. But what drives you personally? So you've done a ton. Like right now, you could probably retire 10, 15 times over and be great for the rest of your life. But what makes you, continue to keep just, pushing forward and, innovating and, just crushing it? What's the drive behind you?
So I think basically fundamentally for every person is what's the best thing to do in your life, right? So what makes life meaningful? And if I look at my options, if I retire and stay on a beach drinking martini or play golf all day, it's a boring life. I can do that for 2 days or 3 days. I get really bored. And today I can't even do that for like half a day. I get really bored. I think I'm already really, really lucky in the sense that I'm doing the best job I can hope for, I can dream for in my life. So I lead a very strong team, doing something I think that's super meaningful, increasing the freedom of money, increasing adoption of crypto around the world. And I don't think I can find another more meaningful job to do. I think I'm really lucky to have this opportunity to continue to work on this. And to make an impact in this world. And if I think about anything, if you give me any other idea that I could do, nothing's as meaningful, right? Like I can relax with my friends for like a couple of hours, get a drink, stuff like that. That's all cool. But I can't do that all day. I can try a different startup. I can do something else, but nothing's going to be as meaningful as this. So for me, I'm already in the luckiest position for me. So that's easy to give me drive. I wake up in the morning, I'm working. Before I sleep, I'm working. For me, it's not even work. It's just part of my life. It's the thing that I can do that's most meaningful. So I'm very grateful to be that lucky to be able to do this.
Yeah, it's I guess the old adage, you know, do what you love what you do, and you'll never work a day in your life. It sounds like you just love working, adding value, and you're just never going to stop no matter how many zeros or commas you have behind your worth, right? You're always going to be doing something.
Yeah, I mean, as an entrepreneur, like how much money you have after a couple million dollars, like the difference between $50 to $100 million is zero, basically.
Yep.
I'm not a guy who spends a lot of money. I no longer buy houses. All my assets in crypto. I don't own anything. I rent everything. I take Ubers. I take rentals. I don't own a car. I don't own a house. I don't own a boat. But I recently bought a Bitcoin watch, which is relatively expensive for me, at $20,000 a watch. But other than that, I don't own anything expensive. So my computer is probably the most expensive thing I own. So for me, like money doesn't, after a certain point, money really doesn't matter that much. It is what it is. But I think doing things, when you do things that has value, that helps other people, you do want to make the business work. That has to be business logic. You can't just be giving money away. We do that for charity and donations, but as a business, we got to have a few businesses. Your business is only valuable if the business makes money. And when you make money, you actually know that's a valuable service you're providing to other people. People are willing to pay for it. So for me, I still continue to do business in a very sensible way, in a very logical way. But money is no longer the goal. It's just how much impact, how much help are we giving other people? How much valuable products are we giving others? So, and when you give something that's very valuable, you will, the money will come. So that's really the challenge. And that's a lot of fun, actually.
Yeah, that's well said, man. That's awesome. What's some advice you have for aspiring entrepreneurs, right? So you've crushed it. What's some of the, you know, I don't know, maybe some of the signs on the road to success, you know, that they should be paying attention to, some of the things that you feel are important that would help them?
Sure. I wouldn't say we've crushed it just yet. We still continually crushing
in crypto.
Yeah. So I think basically I view myself very much as an entrepreneur still. Binance is only 2 years old. We still have a long way to go, so we're still growing. But I do have a lot of lessons or experiences. I'm like 43, so I'm older than a lot of the other entrepreneurs, younger than some, but older than most. So it's a very broad topic. I would say you got to find something that you're really good at and you like to do, and then find an industry where it has a high impact. There's a lot of other things. Perseverance is a really, really strong key once you know what you're doing is right, because doing a startup there's so many challenges. I do read many, many books just on entrepreneurship. I read about 1 to 2 books a week. Usually every week I read about something about entrepreneurship. So the topic is really, really wide. But I think basically find something that you're good at, to do it and pour your heart out. And if you crash and burn, stand up, try it again. I think Binance is probably my fifth or sixth startup, so it's not the first.
Yeah, it's not about getting knocked off the horse. It's about, you know, getting back up and getting back on it, right? So
yeah,
very cool stuff. Do you have any hidden talents or skills that the world doesn't know about? You know, maybe, I don't know, maybe you talk to dolphins, or you skydive on the weekends, or maybe you're a breakdancer. You got any kind of skills or talents we don't know about?
Actually, not really, not anymore. I don't do a lot of other, I don't have a lot of other really sort of extreme or impressive hobbies. My life's much simpler now. So I jog on the weekend. Oh, I jog or swim. If the temperature is nice and cool, I go for a jog. If it's too hot, then I go for a swim. Other than that, I'm a pretty normal person. I don't have any like crazy skydiving or stuff like that. I don't do much of that anymore. I used to be a very outdoor sportsy person. Like I snowboard, ski, windsurfing, scuba diving. I haven't done skydiving actually. I just wanted to a couple of times. Didn't get organized. Never tried bungee jumping. So those are the two things that's kind of on the extreme scale that I didn't really try, but tried a lot of other stuff. I can't surf. I don't know why. just couldn't get the balance. So yeah, but snowboarding is easy. Snowboarding is fine. I was in Canada, right? So lots of places for snow sports. So yeah, other than that, I was more active when I was younger, but now like I try to maintain some activities, but nothing too crazy.
Gotcha. Who's been like maybe one of the most influential people in your life, you know, today, you know, so far, you know, in your life experiences, who's been like the most impactful person on your life?
I would say for me, it's not a one single person. I think there's many, many people who have a lot of impact in my life. I have friends who were very successful when I was younger, when I was like 20, 30-ish. I viewed them as super successful. I've maintained a mentor relationship with them for a long, long time. And I have multiple mentors on different aspects of business, et cetera. Some of them are VC-based, so they're more tuned into investments and fundraising, et cetera. Some of them are more technology-driven, so they're more into like products, designs, et cetera. Some of them may be more marketing-driven. So I can't name all of them, and I can't name a single one, because if I name a single one, it's kind of unfair to the other guys. For the public figures, there's a lot of guys I admire. I admire Elon Musk. I think he's doing crazy stuff. Like that guy can deal with pressure really well. Well, not really well, but he's dealing with a lot of pressure and pushing some really big projects going at the same time. So he does something I couldn't do. He runs three projects at the same time. I can't. I can only do one thing at a time. I mean, there are a lot of big names: Steve Jobs, Bill Gates, Tim Cook. Even I think Tim Cook had a really tough job after Steve Jobs left, and he was able to continue to grow Apple. That's like tremendous. Like that's a really, really hard thing to do. That's less entrepreneurial, but more running a large company and continue to grow it. That's still really hard. I also really respect Warren Buffett. Even though he doesn't like crypto, but he's really successful in terms of traditional investments. And with a guy as successful as that, they have a lot of wisdom. They have a lot of philosophies that work. I disagree with him on crypto, on his view on crypto, but it doesn't mean I don't respect him. I still respect him a lot. And there's many things that we can still learn from him. So that's a very long list, actually. But I do read about entrepreneurship, startups. Like I read Super Pumped, the story about Uber, Hatching Twitter, all of those books. And there's a lot of interesting characters in there. And I think for those guys, we're still seeing them grow. So we'll see who turns out to be really strong.
Yeah, for sure. So I was going to ask you next, you know, who do you admire most in business? But you named off a bunch of guys there. So I guess I'll ask you now, who throughout history, what's maybe somebody that you admire the most, you know, out of, yeah, they could be dead, right? They could be long past, you know, it could be Benjamin Franklin. It could be, you know, whoever. Who's somebody you admire from the past?
I think Winston Churchill is probably the guy who would jump to mind first. I'm sure there's a bunch of guys, but I think Winston was able to turn a really tough situation around, and I really admire those guys. But again, in history, I think most of the names we remember today are guys to be admired, to be honest. So they all did something really extraordinary. Some of them do have luck on their side, but luck is with everybody, to be honest. But all of those guys did something very extraordinary.
Gotcha. You know, another question kind of around Binance a little bit would be, how do you kind of tackle complex problems? Because crypto is still very new, right? There's a lot of people that don't understand it. They don't understand how blockchain works, but you figured out a way to make it easy enough for a lot of people to use. So I guess, you know, the long-winded question would be is, you know, how do you tackle difficult problems and solve them? What's kind of your methodology behind it?
Sure. Actually, so this is something that often confuses a lot of younger entrepreneurs or younger people in general. But for me, I think most things are very simple. You boil them down to your first principles. So if you're making a really tough decision and you're not really sure if this is a good deal, bad deal, are we supposed to work with these guys, or whether we should go this way or that way. For most entrepreneurs, as your team, when you have a small team, the decisions are simple because you have a smaller project. And when your project gets more successful, you have more impact, and you have a larger team, and the decisions that filter up to you are really the tricky ones. But for me, I have a very simple way to deal with it. I have a few first principles. So whenever a complex decision comes up, I ask the really simple questions. I'll give you an example, right? So in September 2017, the Chinese government said all the ICU projects should refund the money to the investors. And we helped a couple projects to do that on the Binance platform. Because of that news, the price dropped quite significantly. And we looked at all the people who participated. The projects don't have enough money to return the BTC to the users. We look at the gap. We said, well, that's about $6 million. And at the time, we just raised $15 million. So it's like a big chunk of our own cash reserves if we were to cover that gap. So the question came up, should we use our own funds to cover the gaps for other projects that conducted through Binance.com? And it was a tricky decision. It's like the single biggest outlay of cash percentage-wise for us so far, even till today. And so, but the very simple question is, does this protect our users? And the answer is yes. And so we made that decision very quickly. And we got tremendous credibility. There was so much positive buzz about us afterwards. Everybody joined Binance because of that. So we actually got a lot more back in terms of user value. So I think basically in any business or in any complex situation, you go back to your roots. You have a couple questions you ask all the time. And those are your first principles. And for different businesses, the different first principles may be different. But for us, it's really, does this help? Does this protect users? And if it's something that we have to do to protect users, we do it. And does this increase crypto adoption? If yes, then we'll want to encourage it to the best extent we can. So it really boils down to this kind of fundamental principles. When you ask those things, all the other stuff doesn't matter much less, like your relationship with other people, with other partner. So a lot of the BS just kind of filters out. So I think basically each person should have one, two, or three maximum first principles. This is the most important thing for you to do. And whenever there's a complex decision, ask that question and figure out the answer. Usually quite simple.
It's awesome. Awesome. And you mentioned you read a lot of books. So what's your favorite book and something you would recommend, you know, to the viewers here that they got to go read as well?
Sure. I think I published a couple of times different list of books. There's a top three list and there's a top 10 list. The top three is very simple. I would recommend everyone to read Homo Sapiens, A Brief History of Humankind. That talks about how we become to be from an evolution point of view, why humans are the way we are and why we behave in some ways that we actually don't think about. So I believe to be successful in this world, you have to understand how humans work because we live in a human society, how human brain works, what we think about and not don't think about is really important. So I think that book's really, really key. The other one is Economics in One Lesson. It talks about a lot of the economic fallacies.
Henry Hazlitt.
You'd be surprised that a lot of people don't know, but like a lot of people in the crypto industry probably do know now, but there's a lot of guys who don't know. A third book, a very classic, is The Law by Frederick Bastiat. That's a very simple book, 70 pages, but it talks about what a law should be and should not be. The law should protect the liberty, property, and it's a three very simple three very simple concepts and
in
why
person.
And person, yes, right. So and what things government should intervene and should not intervene. And when you read that book, you're like, well, there's a lot of stuff that's wrong today. So and there are many other entrepreneurial books which I recently Binance recently published a blog post. I wrote a part of it, and then. If you search for CZ 10 reading recommendations, I think it was published 2 weeks ago. There's a lot of entrepreneurial books like Blitz Scaling, Crossing the Chasm, Team Topology, The Advantage, Culture Code. All of those books are really, really good. So I would highly encourage every entrepreneur to read as many books as you can.
It's awesome. I'll make sure we post a link in the description for that as well. All right. I know you're a busy man, so I'll just probably ask one more question for you. So this is one I like to ask people. It's just a silly little question that I have just to kind of get to know people a little bit more. So if you had a time machine and you could go forward in time as far as you wanted, or you go back in time as far as you wanted, but you had to stay there, when and why would it be?
Oof. If I had to stay there.
Yeah, that's the thing. You can't just peek in and see how things went, right?
Yeah.
Did my bet pay off?
So you can only use it once, huh?
That's it. And then it breaks. So you're stuck with wherever you go.
So to be honest, like if I can go back and come back, then I would use it. But if I could go back and or go forward and not return, I probably would not do it, to be honest. I wouldn't even go back. I'm pretty happy with my life right now. I think I don't want to leave people hanging, not knowing where I am, etc. I'm pretty happy with where things are. And also, even if you go forward, peek into the future. So a lot of Chinese people, like Asians, they like what we call a fortune telling. So they go to like a fortune teller, and they try to figure out, hey, am I lucky this year, next year, especially on New Year. Should I be careful in business, stuff like that. But I don't like to, I never do that, because I think once you do like fortune telling, you're no longer living your own life. You're no longer making your own decisions. It's like, oh, you got it. The fortune teller told me to be, I'm going to be unlucky this year, so I should hold off on my business initiatives. Then are you still living your own life, or are you living the fortune teller's told you, the life that they told you? So I do believe in kind of fate. I do believe we live in a simulation, even almost 100%. But I still think
like
that
like the Matrix,
even,
or
yeah. So even in the simulation, it's still our life. We don't know what kind of simulation we're in. So I still want to make up my own decisions and shape my own future, not just take a peek at it and then do something different. So I think that's a risk. Going to the future kind of doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Whereas I'm okay with where I am. I'm not, I think I could improve a lot of things if I could go back and tell myself how to improve. But I think today I'm already okay. I don't need to change a lot of things. I'm not miserable. I'm pretty happy. I think I'm already in a very lucky position. I don't need to over optimize. It's like if a girl's already really pretty, they shouldn't do cosmetic surgery, right?
You got that right. Yeah, that was a great answer. It's a great answer. But I got to know, what do you mean by we're living in some sort of simulation? Like the Matrix, red pill, blue pill, you know, deja vu, is a, you know, glitch in the code. What are we talking about?
I think basically if you think like, let's say 50 or 100 years later, are we able to be in a simulation? Are we able to put ourselves back in a simulation, right? With the speed the technology is advancing. And if in 50 years we're confident that we can put us lie down there and just be in a simulation and simulate a whole story, what are the chances that we are the first 50 years or we're the first 100 years of people? Like basically from when I was born, we had no electricity where I was born, to like running water, electricity, cell phones, internet, blockchain.
Finance. Yep.
Yeah. So I think within 100 years, we can go from having almost nothing to being able to simulate that. And what are the chances out of the billions, hundreds of billions of years of the universe, we're the first 100 years of doing that? And if we can do that, chances are people will do it. So I think basically mathematically, the chance of us being a simulation is probably 99.9999, a lot of nines. The trick is we don't know, or at least I don't know what kind of simulation I'm in, and I don't know what am I gonna see when I wake up or get out of the simulation. So that's kind of like the time machine peeking out into the future. So and I don't necessarily want to get out and peek into the future. I don't know what kind of simulation I'm in. It could be a simulation where kind of was us simulating Super Mario, where the Super Mario runs in a 2D, just going back and forward. When he goes forward, he sees what's in front of him. He goes backwards. Those things are simulated. But when Super Mario dies, he dies. The next respawn of him may not be that guy. And he doesn't get to interact with his simulators, us, right? So we're living in a different dimension. So it could be humans in, simulating humans. It could be a different dimension of beings simulating us. Or it could be we are really rarely that first time this happened. But I think the chance of that is like super low, mathematically zero. But But it does not make life less meaningful. It does not mean that I want to jump into the future and look at that. I just want to do what I do.
No, that's an incredible perspective. So I never really thought of it that way. And that's pretty awesome.
Yeah. So it's really good to hear like Elon Musk and all those other guys talk about simulation theory. Everyone has a little bit of a different variation to it. But it's great that there's actually a lot of guys who do believe a possibility of this. And I think the possibility is so super high that it's mathematically basically 100%. But it doesn't change the perspective. It just doesn't change the perspective on life, though.
Yeah, I know the Wachowski brothers, you know, they created the Matrix based off that. So who knows? I guess when it says game over, we'll find out if somebody, if we're like Ready Player One and somebody else, you know, creates the next us and, you know, plays the game for us. So who knows? Yeah. But I sure appreciate you, man. I really appreciate you coming on and, you know, talking about yourself and Binance and all the cool stuff that you're doing. Keep crushing it, man. Keep taking care of the customers. You know, and it's a lot of people look up to you, man. So just keep doing what you're doing, man. Appreciate you.
Yeah, thank you so much, Beatles. Yeah, thanks for the interview.
You got it. God bless.
Hey, welcome back, and a huge thanks to CZ for making time for us. This was so awesome to hear his story and his thoughts on so many different things. Truly appreciate you, CZ. For his list of must-read books, check out the link in the description below. Hey, peeps, just a friendly reminder, Crypto Beatles shows are never financial advice, recommendations, or trading strategies. The views expressed here are solely that of Robert Beatles and his guests. Robert Beatles is the co-founder of the Monarch Wallet, host of TradingView Sessions, Crypto Beatles on YouTube, and owns several entities. Robert's opinions here do not reflect that of those entities. Some information shared here may not actually be factual. These shows are for information and entertainment purposes only. Never invest a single Satoshi or penny in anything without first seeking the counsel and advice of a professional financial advisor. Robert Beatles is not a financial expert or advisor. Investing in anything is super dangerous. You can lose all of your money, so always trade at your own risk. Please help us grow the family. Give us a comment and review on the Apple or Google Play Store. It's super quick and easy. Just scroll down, click the little stars, comment, and just help us grow the fam. All right. God bless you. Love you. Till the next one. Talk to you soon.